and it's KBC Arts Now on KBCR. Arts and entertainment as well as the people and places providing it. I'm Adam Rainey Ruiz, and on this edition of the program, we'll hear from Cosme Cordova, who is the curator for the Division 9 Gallery in Riverside. Cosme and his team are hosting the up-and-coming Day of the Dead Color Run, as well as the two-day Day of the Dead Festival in Riverside. You, sir, have been interviewed a lot. You've been around here in pretty much the art scene Riverside since you opened up in 1999.
Correct.
But before that, doing this research, I saw that you immigrated here from San Pedro de la Cueva, which is northeast of Sonora in the state of Mexico. And you came here into the school system and everything, and you struggled for a bit because they thought, oh, it's just a language barrier. But in reality, it was dyslexia. And a lot of people who don't really know about it or have dealt with it or know someone that has dealt with it before kind of see it as a disadvantage. But people who do have it kind of see it as an advantage. So, you know, if possible, how has dyslexia helped you as an artist in your career?
I mean, dyslexia, like, honestly, I didn't know I was diagnosed until I got to college level, you know? Mm-hmm. But over the years, I realized that it's been a blessing in a sense. Because I think, let's just say the normal brain who's not dyslexic, they're used to going A directly to C, you know? Mm-hmm. And they'll go A, B, C. And a person with dyslexia, they don't see the B, but there's something there. So we had to create our own path around it. And while traveling around the path, you get to see other things that the normal brain don't see or the normal person. Mm-hmm. So you stumble into ideas that like people haven't even thought of because you're trying to like figure it out yourself.
Yeah, no, that's what I've noticed. Because my wife, she's dyslexic, and her twin sister is dyslexic as well. And she told me like some of the tricks were like, if you put your thumbs up, like, oh, that's bed, B-E-D. I'm like, yeah. That's pretty cool. Just different ways to just look at things and everything. So I think that's...
And that's in general, like with everything I do, you know, it's like my brain's already set up to think differently than a normal person. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's an obstacle to overcome. But I like to think, I mean, maybe you too, it's very hard to navigate the world being dyslexic, but using it as an advantage is something I think is more powerful than just learning how to deal with it, but to use it as your full advantage, which is, again, very hard to do.
I think it's a superhero power, man.
Yeah, no, it is.
I don't see it as like, like the D stands for dyslexic, not dummy, you know?
I've never heard that. That's good.
So, yeah, you know, I don't see it as like a default, you would say, you know?
Yeah.
I see it as like, I'm just accustomed to see the world and different, you know, I create my own atmosphere, you know, my own triangle, you would say. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to follow the regular square.
Yeah. Also, I saw growing up, you never saw yourself as an artist when you were in elementary school, and you had, you know, teachers really campaign for you and put your work in competitions and stuff. How did that feel for you, just as like a student, like, I'm no artist, but to see teachers advocate for you, because, I mean, you won competitions, you even placed, like, top three and everything, but how did that feel for you at that time?
I mean, you know, unfortunately, you know, like, my dad was an alcoholic, so I used art to escape that world, so I started drawing to, you know, go in my room and draw and ignore the situations that were happening under our roof, you know, but it just came natural for me to just continue drawing, and then along the path, people just saw that as a talent, and they just kept guiding me into that world, you know. And I always tell a story too, like when I went to Nueva Vista High School, how they give you the tour of the high school. I remember going into the art class, and I was like, "Whoa, I'm not an artist, you know. These guys are like amazing, you know. Yeah. There's no way I could be something like this." So I took metal shop, wood shop, and eventually my advisor said, "You need to take something else. You can't be taking those classes." So I took art, and then the teacher saw that I had a talent to it, and it just took off, you know, from there. And I would draw just to impress my friends. And then I would go back to class and she would like, "Oh, I submitted it in the contest. It's not here anymore." I'm like, "What the?" You know? Yeah. And one of the stories too, like I got second place in a congressional art contest, mm-hmm. you know, so you get to meet the senator and all that kind of stuff. And I went to work. I didn't, you know, like, it's not a big deal. Because I didn't, you know, they had no really support of like how big of a deal it was. And then my teacher got a hold of the principal. Then the principal knew my boss. Then they went to talk to my boss and say, "Hey, you need to go home and get ready." You're like, "For what?" "Your teacher's going to pick you up and take you to this, where you're going to get awarded for the second place." I'm like, "Okay." But at the time, you know, I don't know what a senator is or, you know, I even got a bills bond, a keychain, took pictures. I'm like, "Okay, you know." I knew what Bill's mom was. I wish someone would have told me, because when I did get my first car, I needed money and I traded it in. And if I would have kept it now, it would have been, you know, I could have bought a house with it probably. It's all education, right?
Yeah.
I didn't really consider myself an artist, you know, just until people started in high school, like, they started, like, really make sense to me.
So what did your parents think of all this? Like, because you came from a family that really was in construction and everything, and they're like, your son's an artist? And, like, how did they handle that?
There's that much of support. I mean, my dad already had a job once I graduated. Like, you're going to start working in construction, got this job for you, paying good money, you know, all that kind of stuff. So they didn't really understand. They only understand that I wanted to go to school, so they supported that part of it. But as far as being an artist, like, they didn't see a career in it. They didn't support it. Even to this day, I tell friends and family that my mom, I had to, you know, once I started telling her I chose this life, then it started making sense to her. Uh-huh. Like, prior to that, it's like she saw my other cousins with houses, two cars, and, you know, and a house in Mexico. Like, they see all that financial status. And me, I'm always, like, up and down. You know, art is, it's a roller coaster. You have to really love it and be passionate for it to be in it. If you don't, you know, when the roller coaster goes down, it's going to be painful, you know?
Yeah. So what kind of artwork do you do exactly? Like, because I know I've seen, like ceramics a lot and acrylic, but are there any more of that?
Yeah, I do, you know, pen and ink, ceramic, acrylic paint. I started with oil when I went to RCC, pencil drawing, paper mache. But I challenge myself every year. You know, these couple of years I haven't, because I've been really busy with, you know, doing bigger projects. Mm-hmm. But hopefully in 2 years from now, I want to get back on track. But I always challenge myself to do 365 of something. So I did 365 paintings. I did paintings at least twice at 365. Mm-hmm. Ink drawings, 365. Ceramics, 365. My next project is to do 365 paper mache. And also another one is like a found object. So find 365 objects and paint on them or work on them in a sculptural sense. And I have, like, my brain just cannot stop thinking, you know? Mm-hmm. To give you an example, I was recently sick and I was in the hospital for like 10 days in February. And even then, my brain would have stopped and I came up with three events. You know?
Have you seen some of the stuff that you've done? I missed out and I really wanted to go. Was the Mucho Gusto Festival, which looked phenomenal with all the paper mache dance floors. How was that?
It was amazing. It's 3 years going, you know. And that idea came from Eddie. I apologize, but I always forget his name. I'm terrible at names.
It's okay. It's all good.
Do your homework. Figure it out, right? Go to our website. But yeah, like, he had that idea prior pandemic. He would call it Mucho Gusto, and he would have DJs from, you know, all Southern California play music at one of the local clubs downtown. Mm-hmm. And it was really successful. And then him and Richie, also De La Deso, artist, he would DJ as well, and that's how they kind of met with each other. And he designed the font and the Mucho Gusto and all that stuff. And then pandemic hit, and he tried to do it on, like, online, you know, during on the website and stuff, internet. And then after that, I've always wanted to work with him, because I've known Eddie since, you know, way back when. I put him on stage for Day of the Dead. Me just walking to go get some coffee, he was playing drums with two other friends. I go, hey, you guys want to be a Day of the Dead? And like, yeah. And he showed up with the whole group, and it was just amazing. We've been friends ever since. But back to Mucho Gusto, I've always wanted to do something with him. So once, you know, the pandemic cleared up, we, you know, reconnected and started talking. I go, let's make it into a festival. Like, I know how to do a festival. You guys bring in the flavor, in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
So it's basically myself, Eddie, Richard D'Adesso, and also Ulysses. And Ulysses is part of Santo Golpe. Mm-hmm. So, and Quitapenas, you know, is Eddie's group. And now De La Teso, he writes his own music too.
Yeah.
So we're just like four friends having fun, you know? And we're hoping to grow it every year. And this year just doubled what we did the year before. So it has a good rhythm. And I always see them, those events kind of grow into like Day of Dead status, where it's that big. And then this year we're planning to, you know, have a place in LA to do Mucho Gusto takeover. Mm-hmm. Riverside takeover somewhere, and looking for different locations before our big event. So that's our goal for that. But it was amazing. I also do another festival called La Tardeada, and I team up with Killer Queens with that one. And that one's more banda and norteña music. And that also doubled this year too. So we're moving that one to White Park this coming year, and we do that on Mother's Day, which I think is the May 10th, I believe. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be at White Park, but that doubled as well. But that's all more catered to like banda norteña, because everybody loves that old music, you know?
Yeah.
Can't get enough of it. The Oompa Oompa music, like my friend calls it.
Yeah, it was when I graduated from Cal State San Bernardino, and they had on the things not to bring, and banda music was one of them. I'm like, who was going to bring like a banda band to graduation.
Oh, and, yeah.
And I saw it. I'm like, okay, like,
yeah,
okay, this is it. Like, people don't, they don't care. But yeah. Like, you know what? It's their day.
Yeah, it was funny because like one of the events, I might say a bad word in Spanish, but around 2017-18, mm-hmm. we had banda too, and they played for Day of the Dead. But one year, somebody got married or just something, and they decided to walk with a banda down the street during Day of the Dead, which I don't mind. If they would have called me, I would have said, yeah, let's organize it, you know? But they started playing like right in front of the other stage.
Oh,
so it's competing music. So then I rushed down there, everybody rushed down there, my security, and I would tell the guys, hey, you can't do that. You know, you have to go further down, you're interrupting the main stage. And the huge crowd just got around us, and next, you know, someone started chanting cool, you know, which was a bad word in Spanish, right? And,
yeah.
And I take it as a good thing, you know, like when I get people upset and I'm all like, yeah, I got my badge, you know.
Yeah.
And someone's got it on YouTube somewhere, but for 3 months my friends are calling me, hey, is cool. You know?
Yeah, I'm definitely have to see if we could air that word. Yeah, if not, you'll just be bleeped out, unfortunately.
Yeah. But it was hilarious, man. It was the funniest thing. My niece brings it up every once in a while when she gets a little annoyed with me. She's like, you know.
You remember that time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Teaching in RCC. So are you a teacher there, or was it just like a
I was asked to teach.
Okay.
You know, like Jeff Soto's asked me to do a painting demo, mm-hmm. in his class, and then Matthew Luther, he has a printing class, so I did a demo in his class as well, and just to show the kids, you know, how I go approach things, you know, because mm-hmm. even my artwork too, like the beginning when I started painting or start doing any of my artwork, I, you know, approach it like a child, just to have fun, you know. The foundation is more of a child movement in a sense, and as it starts building up on it, it gets more serious, you know.
Yeah, no. And also, digging through your Instagram page, I noticed that you did some workshops, like a font one where you did digital fonts and stuff. Is that something that you're continuing to do, or do you have any other workshops that you're doing or plan on doing?
Oh yeah, that's why we're, you know, at the moment we're redoing the gallery for that purpose. You know, when I first moved in, I had all the space was mine, so I was able to, you know, do workshops and be involved with the community. But then the, you know, economy crashed in 2008 and everything kind of went downhill. And then I went through four different partners to help me, you know, stay afloat, and they moved in. So they brought their own flavor and their own ideas. So it kind of put me in this place where I couldn't really do the things I wanted to do, because now I have someone I have to ask permission, or couldn't interrupt their flow of work as well. But now, within the last about year and a half, I can regain the gallery to myself again. So now I'm you know, revamping it, and we want to do like a clay club. We used to do clay club. We used to do paper mache club. We have this event called Arnival, which I'm hoping to bring it back next year. We did it for 3 years straight, like 2012, 13, and 14. And it's basically where I bring kids who want to be artists. I don't babysit, so the kid has to be an artist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I hate when you go somewhere and the parents just drop them off. Okay, here you go.
Yeah.
No, they need to be an artist. You know, they need to have that passion. But I bring in, you know, professional teachers, myself included, to teach them something. And they create, say, like 9 pieces. They get to keep one. And the other 8 pieces go to the Arnival. And then I create wooden games that are hands-on, where people have to play actual physical games.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to buy tickets to play. And then when they win, they get tokens. And then they trade in for the art.
Oh.
Kind of like a Chuck E. Cheese sense, you know?
Yeah.
But we call it Arnival. So it was really successful because a lot of kids, you know, take the class, and then the money that we make at the event pays for the teachers and also the supplies. So it's a full circle.
I sure hope you bring that back, because I got a little kiddo. He won't be in there anytime soon.
Yeah.
But that, it's important to keep art. That's one of the, I think, best ways to, you know, for self-expression. Like you said earlier, like it helped you. I wouldn't say, I don't know what the right word is, but with your father,
yeah.
You know, he was going through. So everyone needs an outlet. And I think art is the best way to express, whether it's, you know, painting or music or film. I think it's definitely one of the best, healthiest ways to deal with,
yeah,
with things.
Yeah, exactly. It's a way to express yourself or your internal feelings, and you put it on the canvas, on a song, on a poem, on a dance performance, and then people can relate to it, and they start talking to you, and you're like, oh, you know what? I've gone through the same thing. You're not the only one, you know, that's going through these problems. And when I went and spoke to RCC students, I really gave them a lot of personal insight of what was going on during the time I was going to college.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us don't hear the problems, you know? We do hear them, but not that, like, coming from someone who's been, like myself, doing it for a while. Like, it hasn't been, you know, roses and cupcakes, you know?
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while you get a stale donut. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you got to learn to eat it and learn from it and move on. It's just a good way to learning is you to burn your hand, right? You know, don't touch the fryer. Mm-hmm. Till you touch it yourself, and then you're like, oh, shoot, yeah, don't touch the fryer.
Yeah. Told you, man.
Yeah.
On top of bringing back that festival, you do have an event coming up on the 25th at Hunter Hobby Park in Riverside, the Dia de los Muertos Color Run / Walk. What made you decide to do this?
You know, I've always, back in my head, I've always wanted to do like a marathon during Day of the Dead. Mm-hmm. But we tried it last year. We talked to the city and some coordinators and advocates and stuff. But it just seemed too complex to do it during the same, you know, a big event with another big event, you know? Mm-hmm. It would cause a lot of chaos in a sense, you know, with the street closures and stuff.
Yeah.
So they went ahead and did it last year, but I wasn't able to do part of it. Mm. This year, you know, I jumped on board at the beginning. So I've always wanted to do something, you know, because I felt like having the run plus, you know, like from my vision was to start from UCR all the way down university to end up at the Day of the Dead and also have a parade, you know. Hopefully in the future I can see it happening, but not right now. So they decided to do a color run. So, you know, we just started it at the beginning of the year, started talking about it. I designed the logo, and you should sign up. It's $15, you know, oh. And you get a T-shirt plus the medallion if you make it. But, yeah, the color run is going to be awesome because, you know, on the shirt itself on the back, it's you get to write, you know, like I'm running a memory of, and you get to write someone's name. So it's, you know, to bring more awareness, you know, of the Dia de los Muertos, how important it is to us as a culture, you know.
All right, on top of this, you're also hosting the Day of the Dead Festival on November 1st and 2nd, which I think is cool. It actually just lands on the actual day on a weekend. Like, that's a big win.
Yeah.
You know, despite being Hispanic and everything, I am very out of touch with pretty much all the Mexican culture and holidays. The only way I keep in touch with it is with food. So, like, December comes, you know, I'm out there with my grandma making tamales and stuff like that. So, for my sake and for some of our listeners who are not too familiar, can you tell us about the Dia de los Muertos, a.k.a. Day of the Dead?
Day of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos. It, to me, the foundation of it is the altars, and that's what it all begins, you know. Typically, like when I was, you know, I was born in Mexico, what we would do is like a couple of days prior to Day of the Dead, or else, you know, they would go to the cemetery and clean all the cemetery, and then, you know, then they would do a minor celebration. But in Mexico City, I believe, I forget the name of the town, I'm really terrible at names and all that history stuff. But basically, you know, you go to the cemetery, you clean it, and then you bring in things that they loved, you know, from the shoes they wore, the food they ate, the music. Everything that reminds you of that person, you know, you would put on the altar. It's all spiritual, and to invite the spirits to come down and celebrate life with you, you know, in a way to honor it. And to me, I find it important because it's another way of passing down our history from our family members who have passed on and also keep them alive. Because at one point I heard that, you know, you die three times is when you physically die, when people don't visit you at the cemetery, and when they stop talking about you. To me, that's the final breath, in a sense. You know, Day of the Dead, it's a good celebration of life and just keeping those spirits alive, you know. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, even if you can't create an altar, you can go on YouTube and you can find out the meanings and how to create an altar at home. But if you don't have the time, at least think about it. Like, I'm too busy. There's no way I could do an altar. But during the event, I'm constantly thinking of jokes that my brother would say or my dad would do or, you know, uncles or relatives passed on. Mm-hmm. Or tell stories about them to keep them still alive, you know. So it's very important. And it encompasses music. You know, people bring music to the cemetery, dancing. I think it's an amazing cultural event that encompasses art, music, food, performance, everything underneath the arts umbrella. And I think it's just a good way just to keep someone alive, you know, in a good way. A good spirit.
You know, and it's hard to believe because you've been doing this for 23 years?
Yes, 23 years.
23 years. And is this the first time you've been able to get host it for back-to-back days, like 2 days straight? Or?
We did. We started last year and everybody thought I was crazy.
Yeah, because I'm like looking at you said it's going to be there. I mean, like you just said there's going to be art, but also Aztec dancers, food, dance performances, Catarina pageant.
Catarina pageant.
Catarina pageant, live music. Lucha Libre.
Lucha Libre
Wrestling.
Lucha Libre.
Uh-huh. Lucha Libre.
And then Car Alters.
Yes. Can you? I've never heard that before. What is that going to look like at the festival?
Yeah, this year is actually cool because the city allowed me, you know, after poking different buttons in the city, they allowed me to get more street, you know, from 10 to 12 in front of the courthouse, if you're familiar with downtown Riverside. And I work with my friend Chuko, and he gathers all the cars. I have everybody, every stage, everything, doing what they did. I have certain people that I find what they love, and I let them run it. And I'm just there to make sure, you know, like all the little small fires or they're dealing with something major, I'm the one that has the final word. But we started about 5 years ago working together, and it's just bringing a matter of bringing a lowrider car or a classic car, and then you do an alter. You, instead of, you know, putting stuff on the table, you put it on the car, so you're remembering somebody that way, or putting like an altar in front of the car. So all these cars are going to be there, but they're going to be all decorated as an altar, which is really cool.
That's very cool and very unique, because again, I don't know anything about the, I know about altars, but car altars?
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be sweet, especially, you know, car culture is very big in the Hispanic, or at least over here in the Hispanic culture. I'm really glad that you're keeping that alive and relating that to people who could relate to that.
Yeah, my, you know, since the beginning, I've always wanted to create an event that was more of like a buffet. You know, you go to a buffet, you get to choose what you want to see, what you want to do. And at the same time, I want you to go home and go, someone comes to you, hey, did you have that part of the buffet? I'm like, no, oh man, I missed that, you know?
Yeah.
I want you to go home and be like, oh man, I didn't even walk that far. Because
yeah.
it's a big, you know, big footprint. It's from, you know, it's on Market Street in front of White Park University all the way to 14th Street. So it's about 6 blocks.
Yeah.
All of White Park is just dedicated for altars, and there's about 80 altars there. Now, like I say, 10 to 12 on Main Street is going to be the car altars. Then we have a Lucha Libre ring at both ends of a stage on the 14th Street and Market, and then University also in Market is a stage. Then the Aztec dancers have their own parking lot, in a sense. And then I'm trying to put 2 more smaller stages in between as well.
Wow.
So, you know, when you're walking and you have 50 vendors of food and about 70 art vendors, and they all have to have at least 50% of the product has to be made by them. So I really encourage that, you know.
Just to let the people know, this is free to come, right?
Yeah, it's a free event.
Free event?
But
free.
I noticed that other events, other cities, they charge, you know. I'm trying to keep it free as long as possible. You know, it's a free event, Saturday from 1 to 10, and then Sunday 11 to 7.
So with the performances and everything that are going to be there, are we going to see possible some familiar faces that were at past events like Mucho Gusto or last year's Day of the Dead Festival?
You know, every year, I my goal is to, you know, the music and the people that we ask to, you know, to play, I make sure that they're music that people want to dance to.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like, I don't, I like, you know, people, like, suggest music, and I go, do you want to dance to it when you listen to it? If you don't, this is not the jam, you know?
Yeah.
But we have like Pachuco Jose, who has been in the past. He has more of a swing kind of a dance, you know? We had the Red Store Bums, and the reason why I asked them back, because my nephew was in a little push cart eating, and he heard that music, and it was kind of like ska music. Mm-hmm. And he's all dancing to it. And I was like, oh man, just for that, I'll bring it back. If they can make my little 2-year-old nephew dance, you know, they're coming back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have this one group that is kind of, they play kind of like Sonora Vietnamita. They're going to be the headliners for the Saturday, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we have another, I forget their name, but it's three sisters. They play norteñas. And it's really cool because all, you know, all women, mm-hmm. you know, we always bring, they're like, I consider them my house band, the Cherry Bomb Revival.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always, I bring them every year because they can mix it up really well with different music. Like every year they come, it's like different, but makes you want to dance. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I got 2 left feet, so I'm no dancer, but I'll just sit there and bop my head. If I could do that,
yeah.
I'm cruising. So with these altars, they stay overnight? Are they staying over the night?
And yeah, we give them an opportunity to, you know, they stay the 2 days mm-hmm. or the 1 day. And we're still, you know, have some spaces available if anybody wants to be a part of it. We charge by location in the park. And then if you're doing one, the same price is for both days.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have certain locations for 1 day and certain locations for 2 days.
Oh, cool.
And we have security overnight, and you know, that's one of the most expensive things, and also the police officers, you know?
Yeah. really hate to change the tone on this, but it is a big fear factor with ICE causing fear with the Latino community. Do you have any message to anyone out there that might be afraid to come out and to join this event?
I mean, you know, the city doesn't support, you know, that department, you know, and they also make me hire police officers. So, you know, we've been fortunate. Mucho gusto. People were nervous about that too, but it was packed, you know?
Yeah.
And that was September 20th. And then we did another one September 27th, the Art and Music Festival that I also collaborate with the Downtown Partnership and the Riverside Arts Council. And that was a huge, you know, Hispanic, Latino, Mexican American community that came by because we had a band, Murucosco, you know, and they have a huge following. And also, you know, we had no problems there either. So, you know, just come on down and enjoy it. And I know that if you're nervous, you know, that's, so, you know, at the end of the day, it's your call, you know. But so far, we've been blessed in the fact that we've had any incidents, you know.
With these two big events coming around the corner, where can people sign up or find out more information about the Day of the Dead color run or festival?
We both, you know, we have the Instagram and also, you know, the raincrosscolorrun.com. You know, we just launched that pretty early for people to sign up. And then for the Riverside Day of the Dead is just the Instagram. Riverside Day of the Dead is the best, you know, place to get information, especially like, you know, we're pretty much maxed out with vendors and food vendors. But for next year, you know, to sign up because we always register people like in February or so. So a lot of people ask when, you know, that's when we put all the information on Riverside. Right now we're currently, like I said, we're remodeling the gallery at the same time our website. So it's down at the moment, but hopefully we, in about 6 months, it's going to be really active.
Do you have any other message that we'd like to say to our audience that you want to relate to them or want them to know?
Yeah, you know, just follow us on Instagram and, you know, become part of our community. I mean, I'm here, I've been here supporting the community for almost over 30 years, and thank you for that. And I hope, you know, we're going to have a re-grand opening November 9th, mm-hmm. And it's going to be 2 to 7. We're going to have two local bands play and a DJ, and I'm trying to get Richie De La Desso to sing a couple songs, you know.
Ooh, well,
it's going to be fun.
Definitely looking forward to that. Well, thank you, Cosme, for coming here. I really do appreciate you taking your time with, because, again, busy is very underrated. You got a lot going on, so Thank you very much for coming here, man.
Well, thank you for the invitation. This is awesome, man. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm in a doctor's office, but it's good.
No checkup today.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
No, thank you. If you are interested in these events, there is still time to sign up for the Day of the Dead Color Run on the 25th. If you are interested in the Day of the Dead Festival, you can check out their Instagram at Division 9 Gallery or the Day of the Dead Festival Instagram page, which is at Riverside Day of the Dead, all one word. And if that's too much, you can check out the KBC Arts page where the links will be posted. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KBC Arts. Thanks again for Cosme Cordova. I also want to thank David Fleming, Jessica Greenwell, Rick Dulock, Donna Gotch, Della Desso, and everyone at the KVCR station. Many past episodes can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Most shows can be found at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm Adam Rainey Ruiz. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.